welcome to our podcast today. We will be exploring some of the trends and imperatives around business service management today, and I'm very lucky to have with me on this podcast today Jean-Pierre Garbani, a vice president with Forrester Research in the Infrastructure and Operations Research Organization. I am Michelle Hudnall, and I'm with the new NetIQ business unit, as is my partner here, Travis Green. So, Travis, why don't you kick us off today?
Thanks, Michelle. And as Michelle said, I'm Travis Green. I've been with NetIQ for about 6 years now. I'm a senior product marketing manager focused on the App Manager product line. And so I'll take that perspective as we go through the call. But let me ask JP first. You were one of the first analysts to cover the business service management movement years ago. Like a lot of those trends in IT, the interest in BSM has seemed to wane recently. So you've covered this in your recent report, BSM Rediscovered, where you discuss where folks have missed the mark and focus. Do you see it continuing to wane, or is it imperative today?
Frankly, I think that the foundation, the things we're looking for in BSM, was to reconcile the view of the end user who sees applications and the view of IT, which sees infrastructures. And to do that, we imagined that would create a model of the application, all the dependencies that are needed to deliver that application to the end user so that we could reconcile these two views. I think that that foundation has not gone away. What has gone away to a certain extent is the name itself, the business service management name, which became kind of something else. So the BSM moniker, which was coined actually by someone at NetIQ now, about 10 years ago, business service management was created by Manager Objects. That term was transformed by mostly the interest, I think that the, not conflicting, but the interest in rationalizing processes with an ITIL is definitely one of the influences behind this change. So BSM took a bigger role, a bigger slice of the pie in the IT organization in general, in the sense that it brought a rationalization of processes and the tools to support that rationalization of processes by implementing workflows, by doing a number of things like that. But the foundation of the original BSM, which was to manage operationally the performance, availability of applications and infrastructure, that didn't go away. And we see today, you know, application performance management, for example, being, in my mind, a resurgence of the original BSM. So the key to BSM is still alive. It simply changed names or changed monikers along the way. But I don't think the interest in that foundation didn't wane at any time. Okay, it's still very present.
Very interesting. So is it fair to say then there's kind of been a resurgence in the focus on what the original intent around BSM was?
Absolutely. I have done a number of papers on the subject of performance management. And one of the key things that I see there is the time it takes people to resolve an incident, for example, or performance lapse. And that time and the resources that are used to correct that problem is simply coming from the fact that there is still a number of silos of technology within an IT operation, and that these silos are using disparate tools, collecting data that don't really align, that is not integrated, that doesn't come on a common dashboard. So these people are all trying to understand something in a very complex environment. In other words, they are trying to fight complexity with complexity. And that doesn't work, of course. And when you talk to clients, that's really what they want to reduce. They want to get a tool that will let people work together, that is, some layer of integration that will provide a common view for all these technology silos to work together.
I love that term, fight complexity with complexity. It's not necessarily the best strategy. It seems to me like you're saying that the primary driver still is around reducing the time to restore or recover from incidents. So is that focus then really what's driving this resurgence and going back to the original meaning of BSM?
I think so. When I have clients, whether they are financial institutions or e-commerce clients, for whom the performance is critical for the productivity of the business, even though, you know, they are making progress in delivering a good application, in delivering it with the kind of performance that were expected, they are more and more moving parts in a business service or in an application. And not having the visibility into these moving parts, not having the capability to understand where to look, is definitely one of the problems that they identify as preventing them to resolve issues. And these issues are costing a lot of money. It's not trivial. I have seen, as a client, I have seen these problems with my favorite airlines, with my favorite banks, etc. As an IT professional, when I'm trying to connect to my home banking and I start seeing different things, I'm saying, oh my God. And so it happens that home banking provider is also one of Forrester clients, so I know exactly what's going on behind the scenes. And definitely these type of issues is key to the delivery of quality of service.
Is there an issue with the competition that cloud now introduces when we start thinking more from a software as a service perspective that internal IT organizations need to take into consideration as they're trying to better manage their response to incidents and implement more alignment through BSM?
There is certainly a challenge, but it's not the first time we have that challenge. Of course, for the younger people, you've got to remember the end of the 80s, beginning of the 90s, where divisions, groups, etc. in the business were going out and buying a server or buying a bunch of PCs without asking IT about it, because all of a sudden it became affordable. You could buy a $5,000 server and nobody was the wiser, okay? And it stopped at some point in time because business people realized that they weren't IT professionals, and that despite the fact that a small server or a PC is not a big piece of equipment, it's still a computer with an operating system, with applications, etc. It needs care and feeding. So I expect that we'll see the same thing happen, that you've got to justify financially what you're doing. If you are a business, you know, there's somewhere some accounting that says, well, you can do this or you cannot do it. And as long as IT is capable of understanding the financial consequences of either of putting an application or service in-house in the cloud or as a service in the cloud, they will stay on top of it because they will have the capability to demonstrate that the same service is better served by this particular technology. As long as they can do that, they are master of the game. But that presupposes, again, that you were going back to the source of our discussion, to the root of it. That presupposes that they understand what are the components of the service so that they can do a bill of material and cost that bill of material. And then they will be capable of saying, Mr. Customer, if you want to have these functionalities, if we go to the cloud, they are going to cost X dollars. If you go SaaS, they are going to cost Y dollars over the course of 36 months. Or if we do it internally, this is a cost for the company. We're shifting from a technology decision to a financial decision. And that's how IT is going to regain or to keep its role in the enterprise, because it will start talking the language of business.
It sounds like there's really more of an imperative to be able to do the financial management to say that this is the actual cost of the service we're providing. Do you see that IT organizations are behind on that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But it's going to be a big change for everyone. Okay. IT organizations will have to change the way they do business. Okay. They will have to be far more rigorous, pay more attention to governance, enforce a certain number of rules, and be more careful or more attentive to how they are using resources.
Do you think the cloud providers and a lot of the service providers that are cropping up are serving as competition to drive that change?
Well, I think that if things evolve the normal way, the cloud providers will have to evolve too, in the sense that the service that they provide, which is relatively basic today, it has already evolved to a certain extent, should evolve again. And that poses another set of issues, especially for vendors, in how they are going to cooperate with these cloud providers. Who is going to provide what? What is the ecosystem around an Amazon.com, for example?
Yeah, because clearly some of the providers will be more mature with their management processes than others.
Yeah.
I guess I was driving at some of these providers tend to be better at communicating the cost and value of their service versus IT speaking in terms of availability of servers and technologies.
Sure, but if you have an understanding of what needs to be in a service, what the cloud provider is going to provide is fundamentally compute and storage, which are two ingredients. There is the cost of management. There is the cost of network. There are many other costs associated to delivering an application. So what IT needs to do is what has been done for probably a century in manufacturing, which is do a cost-value analysis.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Here is the bill of material of my car. Okay. Can I find another provider that will provide this headlamp or this type of steering wheel or this type of pedal assembly that will reduce the cost while maintaining the value of the car?
Sure.
Or if it reduces the value, how much and what does it mean for the customer, that type of thing. IT is not used to do that.
Right. Recent headlines when Amazon took its first hit and went down and lots of headlines around the cloud has failed. They're providing hardware at the end of the day. They don't know what the workloads are that you're putting into the cloud. And there's instrumentation that I believe still, hear your thought on it, but I believe it's still the responsibility of the IT organization, whether it's the applications group or the monitoring availability group, because how is that provider to know what you're running?
Absolutely. It doesn't change. The fact that you're putting your application into cloud doesn't change the fact that you've still to manage your code, your access, and the problem associated with it. Okay.
In this rush to the cloud, I kind of view this as similar to virtualization. It's a new technology. It seems cheap. Let's move it off our books and onto someone else's. And those of us who've been in the management space for a long time, they're overlooking the management responsibility because there's a cost to it.
Sure. That's why I drew a parallel with the PC phenomenon at the end of the 80s.
Yeah.
Where everybody was jumping up and down and going to, hey, we don't have to talk to IT. We can go to Radio Shack and buy a PC. And it stopped because the first time they had to do an upgrade or they had a problem with it, they needed an IT professional.
Absolutely.
And that's exactly the same thing. For example, if you look at cloud usage today, development and test are using the cloud. Okay, that's fine because these are IT professionals using another form of compute and storage. Okay?
Right.
But they understand what they are doing.
Right.
When it comes to someone in the business buying or asking IT, can I buy this software as a service, CRM as a service, Salesforce.com, that type of thing. Sure. Okay. Because this is a punctual application delivery for which the vendor has full responsibility in terms of service levels, etc., etc. Great. Anything in between requires an IT professional somewhere, some kind of support, some kind of understanding, some kind of management. And the business is not ready to do that.
Right, right.
So I think we'll see first an evolution of the cloud providers themselves in the sense that their model may be closer to the private cloud model, okay, which includes a number of management facilities.
Right.
So you may imagine that there is some layer of configuration management, some layer of data collection, things like that, provided by the cloud provider. So an evolution of their capabilities and parallel an evolution of us vendors of management software in the sense that we would be able to get that data that is collected by the cloud provider and integrate it into our management software so that we present a service-oriented view, an application-oriented view to the IT operation itself.
Right, right. There was a lot of focus a few years back on CMDBs, and now it's kind of morphing into CMSs. And in one of your papers, you discussed something that I find interesting, just as you were talking about crossing the technology silos. The availability group and the monitoring group usually is very separate from the group that needs to manage or control the configuration.
Mm-hmm.
And just as you said, they both really need to have that same view to be able to understand the business impact. Are you seeing these two worlds come together, and what's the catalyst driving it?
Again, we've got to go back to fundamentals. If you look at where are the problems coming from, and if we were talking about incidents and problems, which is the visible part, okay, the system stopped working. But it stops working because, well, there may be a real incident, a failure of some element or some line of code or whatever, but it may be also that we failed to configure it properly, we failed to load the data properly, we failed to test it properly, etc. So there is a lot of now, I think, when the most advanced customers at Forrester a keen interest in what we call DevOps, that is the link between development and application, all the things that have to do with what we used to call the lifecycle management. How do we create an application that could be configured, that could be delivered, that could be released, that could be managed more easily? So if you look at the CMDB as kind of a bill of material of the application, on the one end, you have the people making sure that the components of the applications are configured and changed and updated correctly. And on the other end, you have people who are using these components to deliver the application. Both have the need to know what's there. Okay, both have a vested interest in the integrity of the components, whether it's because they are part of a bigger piece, which is the application, or because they are critical in making that application work.
Are you seeing more and more companies then make that link and evolving past just the notion of a CMDB for the sake of a database of information, but moving beyond that to understand the true priority and impact those components have within a business service or how they're impacting the service?
I still see a lot of interest there. What I see also is that there are lots of difficulties in implementing a CMDB or a CMS. It's, on the one end, there are the different CMDBs that are available on the market. On the other end, you have discovery mechanisms that may not be sophisticated enough to discover a lot of. And then you have the difficulties of implementing the whole thing, especially because there are different silos of technology. One of the main obstacles is very often that the network group will have its own database of components that they will update regularly, and then there will be the server group divided between different flavors of Unix and Windows, etc. All will have their own secret little tool to work with, and at some point in time, you've got to reassemble that into a single view of the truth. And that creates a lot of conflicts, difficulties. So implementation is critical, and implementation has been so far very difficult, which explains why, as I've shown in the paper you mentioned at the beginning, BSM we discovered, there are more and more solutions appearing on the market with their own discovery tools, their own micro CMDB, if you wish. And that's not going to help unless we are smart enough to recapture that information and put it back where it belongs.
Sure. So would it be fair to say that each of these tools has a wealth of data specialized in what it does, and a key to the success is the federation or the integration of the data across those sources?
Yeah, it's definitely one of the things that we should aim for. And for example, in a paper that I wrote last year on the competitive analysis of application performance management, one of the questions was, if you have a discovery tool for tracing transactions, can you send that information to the CMDB to make it better?
Uh-huh.
And I think it's critical. The problem that we're facing in the next few years is the fact that we are not only diversity in the data center, because we've implemented a bunch of projects and services and applications, but also now we have multiple choices when it comes to deploy an application. You can put it in a private cloud, you can put it in a public cloud, on a virtualized server, or you can acquire the service through SaaS. Okay, so that diversity is amplified by the fact that there is more and more services coming every day into an IT operation to be catered to and serviced and etc. So it becomes so complex that it's totally impossible for a human being to understand it and keep a picture of a single service in their head. So you need tools. You need a way to abstract this diversity, to integrate all that information into something that's meaningful. And to integrate, you need a template for integration.
JP, obviously, being tool vendors, we would wholeheartedly support that the tools are necessary. But to be fair, I'm sure our audience is wondering, what are the real challenges when they're looking at a tool provider, especially as we start bringing cloud into this? What sort of new challenges does that introduce? And do you see things changing as a result of this new paradigm shift towards moving computing resources offsite?
Yeah, of course, because for the time being, the cloud is kind of an outsourcing of your infrastructure. You're taking an application, you're taking a service, you're putting it onto a platform and with storage that exists somewhere, and you're getting the results through the net. or you're implementing your own private cloud based on that model. And the issue that it raises is that, first of all, it is a choice, which we didn't have before. I mean, all my career, which has been 43 years now, we had to build what we wanted to consume, like cooking your own meals. You had to go to the grocery, buy the ingredients, and cook them yourself. Okay, now you can go to a restaurant. We have alternatives. You can get your food from the net. You can get your food from the local pizza store. You can get your food pre-cooked, and et cetera, et cetera. So you have many choices between private, public, virtual, physical, et cetera. And then that creates a lot of issues. The first issue, which goes back to what we were talking about, is that more than ever, you've got to know where things are. How are you going to release a new application if you don't know where you've put the first one? Okay, so the concept of CMDB is a concept of, or CMS, a concept of understanding how the infrastructure is used and by what is more and more important. So that's definitely a prerequisite for any form of management, because from that knowledge, you're going to be able to understand performance, you're going to understand capacity, and if you understand capacity, you're going to understand the financial side of things, etc., etc. All this is linked to the foundation, which is where did I put the stuff and how much does it consume?
And to your analogy of the restaurant, the business being the consumer of the service, IT is still responsible for that overall service, regardless of who they sub it out to, whether it's private or public clouds.
Yes.
And still being able to monitor and manage it.
IT is a little bit like my mother, you know. Whether we're going to a restaurant or we're eating at home, she's still watching my calories.
That's right.
Making sure that I'm not eating too much or eating the wrong food.
Absolutely. That brings us to our conclusion of our podcast today. I want to thank our guest speaker here, Mr. J.P. Garbani from Forrester Research, as well as Travis Green from NetIQ. Thank you, J.P.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thanks, J.P. Thanks, Michelle.